Okay. Yeah, so sorry about the phone. Just wait for that to pick up.
This isn't the best start, is it,
No,
really?
nothing if not professional.
Is it done?
There we go.
Brilliant. Always. I've also made a slight boo-boo because I've uploaded the prequel episode as series one, episode one,
Right.
which means on iTunes numbering automatically, this episode becomes episode two. So I'm going to have to
Okay.
deal with that somehow.
Yeah. Okay. Why did we call
Yeah.
it Pod 2?
Oh, because the prequel's not really an episode, is it, as
Well, it kind of
such?
is. I think you've got to bite the bullet and say, well, it is, I think it is. If iTunes are calling it episode one,
Okay,
we've
fine.
got to call it episode one.
Right. So partly because of my own error, the prequel's now episode one. So this technically is episode two.
Yeah, we
We've
could
got a
just
head
say that.
start. We've got a
You
head
could say that.
start.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Well,
Because
should
of
we?
your error again.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Shall we record episode two then?
Well,
Pod
let's go for
two.
episode two, part
Here
two.
we go.
One. Let's get started. Let's go.
The Gerry Anderson Podcast with Jamie Anderson and Richard James.
Right, well, here we
Well,
are.
here we are again. Who would have thought it possible?
Well, we did promise that in the prequel episode that there would be more episodes, so hopefully people are expecting it.
Well, let's hope so.
But welcome and thank you for coming back. Or
Yes, well, that's a good start, isn't it?
maybe just thanks for coming for the first time to listen to some nonsense from a pair of twits, as I
Yes,
described
imagine
us.
that. Imagine if someone had just stumbled across us right now. What must they be thinking?
Well, we should introduce ourselves so that they can think at least they know who we are. Who are
Yes.
you?
But yes. Well, I'm Richard James. I'm an actor, friend of Jamie Anderson. I worked for his dad many moons ago on a TV show called Space Precinct. More recently, Jeremy Vile in the Terrahawks audio adventures.
Yes, absolutely. And also on another secret project too.
Well, which we can't mention, of course. Not
Not
yet.
yet, no. And I'm Jamie Anderson, younger son of Gerry Anderson, creator of lots of amazing shows
Yeah.
like, well, should we name a few?
Go for it.
Fireball XL5,
Yeah.
Thunderbird, Stingray, Captain Scarlet, UFO,
Space
Space
1999. I
1999.
mean, it's all
Good
there.
choice.
Lavender
Terrahawks.
Castle.
Oh, Lavender Castle, that's
You see?
a curveball there.
Never usually gets a look in, does it?
No, it doesn't. Space Precinct, New Captain Scarlet. I
So what
mean.
are we talking? In terms of years, what's the stretch between the first to the last of Jerry's productions?
Depends what you count as a Gerry Anderson production, but as producer on a full series,
Yeah.
first being Twizzle in 1957, last being New Captain Scarlet in 2005.
Amazing.
That's a pretty good stretch, isn't
It's
it?
a good
Good
five
spread.
decades, isn't it, really?
Yeah, very
It's
impressive.
extraordinary.
And hundreds of episodes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, Richard, it's very important that people listening to this subscribe, obviously, because
It
then
is.
when we have new episodes out, then they'll get notified immediately. And also, it makes us feel like we've got, actually got people listening to us and we're not just talking
Yeah.
at each other and into the ether.
Yeah, that's right.
And once you've listened, if you've enjoyed it, then please rate and review because that really helps us get out there and get found by more Gerry Anderson fans. If you didn't enjoy it, we're terribly sorry,
Well,
but
just
we
keep
won't force
quiet.
you. Yeah, but don't say anything to anyone. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I thought, because this is our first one, so we don't have lots of emails into the podcast address, which by the way
Yes.
is podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk, where we'd love to hear from you.
Yep.
I thought we should talk about the first time we saw a Gerry Anderson show,
Right.
just to be awkward
Yes.
and put you on the spot, Richard.
Right. No, that's a great idea. Absolutely.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah, but I mean, that's difficult for you, isn't it? Because you grew up with the stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I know, but
Yeah.
and actually, it's so early and so like sort of mixed for me. I can't quite remember. But
Yeah.
while I try to remember, I think you should tell us yours.
Well, my first one was Space 1999. In fact, that was the first time I really became aware of Gerry's work. So I didn't really grow up watching the puppet series, the Thunderbirds and the Captain Scarlets, but I really only became aware of his work through Space 1999. And I remember distinctly watching the very first episode, Breakaway. So when was that, Jamie? What year?
75.
So I was six.
Great.
And I remember it so clearly. That's right. I remember Martin Landau. He was my type of, you know, when you kind of fixate on a leading man. He was very, very dashing, very good looking in his space suit. And he was just the all action hero, really. And I remember the effects, and I remember the shape-shifting aliens, and I remember the Eagle Transporters, of course. Had my own toy Eagle Transporter, which my sister was sick on in a bucket on the way to Wales on holiday.
That's my favourite Gerry Anderson memory of yours, I think.
You see how things stay with you. But yes, for me, Breakaway, Space 1999, 1975. And you, Jamie?
Space 1999, 1975. great little funny tongue twister there. For me growing up, obviously, Dad had was just finishing the third series of Terrorhawks, the last 13 episodes of Terrorhawks, which they shot in 86. So around that time, Terrorhawks was being put out on VHS by Channel 5 Video, who used to do great NAF adverts featuring Parker, I think. Yeah, they got David Graham to do who voiced Parker, obviously, yes. to do this thing about, you know, the amazing worlds of Mr. Henderson, I think.
Yes, my ladies and gentlemen, not only Thunderbirds are goo, but the indestructible Captain Scarlet, sensational Stingray, the little nipper June 90, and the terrific Terrorhawks are all available on Channel 5 Video. Of course, they're not all as handsome as me.
Maybe I'm misremembering that.
Of course.
So I had all those great Channel 5 videos. So a lot of Terrorhawks, definitely. But also, we had Thunderbirds videos, VHSs. And I'm pretty sure Attack of the Alligators was one of the earliest ones for me. Yeah. But when I was born, I don't think there was really anything. There was nothing being broadcast that was watchable by me as a little one.
Was there a sense, when you were growing up, particularly going to school, was there a sense that other people knew more about your dad than you did, or his work at least?
Absolutely. Certainly when Thunderbirds came on the BBC in 1991 and it was being broadcast.
Ah.
Yeah, that was the weird point, I think,
yeah.
Because I didn't really appreciate his amazing output and the effect it had on people until suddenly my friends at school were watching it and their parents were watching it again and sending their children into the school with annuals from 1965 to get signed. Obviously, I'd take them home and get them signed and return them. So they, you know, I was discovering these things about, you know, 30 years ago in Dad's life.
Yeah.
Through my friend's parents and their strange collections of memorabilia.
Yeah, extraordinary. So yeah,
it was a very strange period.
Yes.
But also quite exciting to learn that, you know, I kind of, that by that point, knew that he worked in TV, but I didn't realise that he had that kind of famous aura.
Yeah, and that his name was above the title on a lot of programmes.
Yeah, no, well, yeah. You don't know what that means when you're a kid. You don't appreciate the, you know, the complexity and the enormity of a television production when you're a child. Just watch it.
Yeah, that's right.
Accept it for what it is. Yeah, so amazing. But yeah, Terrorhawks and Thunderbirds with a smattering of Scarlet and stuff. I didn't see the live-action shows until much later.
Yes, yes. And of course, Space Precinct, you were there during some of the shooting, I remember.
I was, yes.
Yes. I remember bumping into you in the corridors at Pinewood.
9 or 10 years old. Yeah, and that was an amazing experience. And that's where we met. And
indeed.
And that's where
here
you
we
thought.
Are now.
Well, that's where you thought I'm going to ignore this oik for the next how
until
long?
Until it becomes useful to my plan.
And here I am. Yeah. Anyway, I say we've got quite a long history together, Richard. In a way,
oh gosh,
we? I had a full head of hair when we first met, and you had eyes on the side of your head when we first met.
Yeah, indeed.
That won't mean anything to anybody who hasn't watched Space Precinct.
Well, they should watch it. Find it and watch it now. Then it will make sense.
Yes, Richard was Officer Oren. Look out for Officer Oren.
Yes, of course.
Anyway, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah.
What's next?
Well, we'd love to know, people listening to this podcast out there in podcast land, what were your first experiences of Gerry's shows? Do you remember the very first episode of a Gerry Anderson production that you ever saw? We'd love to hear about it, so send your thoughts in an email to podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk. And I'd also like to add something to that, because you mentioned, Jamie, that a lot of people were inspired by your dad's work over the years, and I'd like to know, how has Gerry's work inspired you at home? Did he inspire you to choose your career? I know there are a lot of scientists and engineers who went into their career, chosen career, because of an inspiration from one of Jerry's shows. Or does he just inspire you to make your own fan videos or cosplay or to make your own little vehicles, models, replicas and so on? As I know, there's a lot of creative people out there who do a lot of good work inspired by Jerry's production. So drop us a line, podcast@jerryanderson.co.uk. Tell us the first time you ever saw a Jerry Anderson production. What was it and when? And secondly, how has Jerry's work inspired you? That would be interesting to know, wouldn't it?
They would be fascinating. And beyond that, basically any question or thought or idea or bizarre dreams you may have been having that are Jerry Anderson related.
You might regret saying that.
Keep them clean, obviously. We basically, you know, we'd love to hear from you any contributions you have, any questions, and we will do our best to answer them. Although we can't promise we'll be able to do so with any level of professionalism or accuracy.
Or authority.
But we will try.
Now,
we've got a couple of questions we're going to answer coming up in our sort of listener emails section.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, should we have some Jerry Anderson news?
Is there Jerry Anderson news?
There's always Jerry Anderson news, and here it is.
It's true.
Well, here's the news.
Great, let's hear it.
People might not know that there's lots of Jerry Anderson stuff happening all the time.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people may think, well, you know, the great man's passed away. His last production was in 2005. They may not be aware of our efforts on things like Fab Live on Facebook.
They may not be aware?
Yes, if you don't know what Fab Live is, then...
Oh boy, you're missing a treat.
Yeah. Well, it's our monthly Facebook Live broadcast, again with Richard and I, where you can actually see our faces, which is probably why you haven't done that.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a treat. But we do cover monthly Jerry Anderson news, because there's stuff happening all the time. That may be sort of legacy DVD and Blu-ray releases, books, merchandise, audio dramas, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, we are working on completing Dad's unfinished work, so there is absolutely 100% a future in new Jerry Anderson productions.
Yeah,
because indeed, he's the closest we had in the UK to Walt Disney. So it's very important to me that we keep the legacy alive. And obviously, Richard, it must be slightly important to you as well, because you keep doing these things with.
Well, I know. Exactly. I'm not quite sure what my motive might be, but it's fun, isn't it?
It's fun.
As well as being an important thing to be a part of, it's fun to do. And I think Jerry's work is all about fun, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Fun, escapism.
Yeah.
And a bit of nostalgia thrown in. Because there's something lovely that links all of the shows. There's always that Anderson spirit.
Yes. Yes, recognised by all generations. I think even children who watch it now get that, don't they?
Yeah,
they don't get the nostalgia because they didn't grow up with it. But they get a sense of the excitement.
Exactly. And the positivity and the cool machines and the all that sort of
course.
Stuff. So, things you may have missed recently. Network Distributing have released Captain Scarlet, the classic series from 1967, in high definition on Blu-ray.
Nice.
And very recently, they've announced that with Volume 4, the final volume in the set, there will be a deluxe edition. And the deluxe edition is a lovely presentation box with Volume 4, Volumes 1 to 3 not included, a poster and a comic. The poster and the comic with an illustration by the great Mike Noble
The
almost as great Lee Sullivan.
Yeah, well.
Now, Mike was one of the original artists on TV21, which is a comic from the 60s, which lots of you may have had in that time. Mm-hmm. It had a circulation of 1 million copies a week or something bonkers like that.
Amazing.
So many kids got to see this incredible comic. So there's a new edition of a Captain Scarlet themed sort of TV21-esque comic in there. End title art print cards. You know the ones I mean from the end titles by, I think, Ron Embleton?
Yes, of course, absolutely.
Beautiful, amazing pictures of Scarlet drowning in toxic waste.
Absolutely. And for many people, that's what sticks in their mind. I bet that's a first memory for a lot of people out there. We're asking people for first memories of their Jerry Anderson productions, and I bet those end credits are a right up there with a lot of people.
I suspect so. Now, something in that the set that we haven't yet revealed, and I think is probably an exclusive at this point when we're recording, and hopefully hasn't been revealed before it goes out, is that There's a new documentary on there, and the documentary features previously unseen and unheard video and audio archive footage with Dad.
Ah.
We found his final interview, which was unearthed recently, and there's some great little nuggets in there, and also audio from his biography interviews with Simon Archer, which were done in the mid-90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So there's some lovely nuggets of information there, plus some new interviews with Mary Turner, who's a chief puppeteer on the series, and Alan Shoebrook, who works in the effects and models department. So it's a lovely kind of sort of 45-minute story of the history of Captain Scarlet with new material, which is always nice.
Yeah, fantastic. Wow.
So it's full of goodies, and there's also a couple of strange archive bits and bobs, including a very odd video of The Spectrum, who were the pop band who sang the end theme, doing some weird music video on Portobello Road.
It's
so insanely 60s. Well, they start the video in their Scarlet uniforms,
yes,
and then change into other stuff. It's bizarre.
Brilliant.
But worth a watch. So yes, grab that copy, because there's only 1,250 units available worldwide.
Okay, and where could we find these deluxe editions?
The first 1,000 units are only available from Network. From their website, networkonair.com. And then there'll be an additional 250 units. Who knows where they'll be available from, but we'll be able to tell you on the podcast very soon.
Okay, great. Look forward to that.
Wink, wink.
Yes.
And while we're talking about DVDs and Blu-rays, there's also ITV's brand new repackaged UFO DVD.
Yes, great.
The complete set, which I was going to pick up it and show you, but there's no point, because here's the sound of a repackaged DVD set. Anyway, it's got a beautiful cover on it. And is an extremely inexpensive way to own the entire UFO set.
Yeah, very tempting.
I think it's $19.99 for 8 discs, 8 DVDs.
That's incredible.
Thank you, Richard, yes.
Yeah.
Cries of incredible value.
It is incredible value, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And also, I think just more generally, more widely, there's not, like I said, there's not just sort of re-releases of old material, be they in standard definition or high definition. We've been creating new stuff. You've already mentioned Terrorhawks and Big Finish. If you don't know who Big Finish are, again,
where have you been?
What have you been doing?
Yes.
Big Finish Productions, bigfinish.com, purveyors of fine audio drama, and that audio drama includes Terrorhawks and Captain Scarlet.
Yeah.
Richard is in one of the Terrorhawk stories.
Indeed.
But there's also Captain Scarlet Spectrum Files, which are enhanced audiobooks featuring some original and new voices, which are audio adaptations of some books from the 60s. We've got, I don't know how many new episodes of Terrorhawks, 25, 26 new episodes of Terrorhawks.
Amazing. Featuring original cast members.
Yeah, all the surviving and available original cast members.
Yes, and a few guest stars as well, I seem to remember.
Yes. Nicholas Parsons.
Yes.
David Graham. Richard James.
Who's he?
He's an Olivier-nominated actor, I'll have you know. Anyway, so look, there's new stuff coming out, and also there's new projects like Firestorm, Gerry Anderson's Firestorm. So Firestorm was an idea that Dad put together in 2001. It was then bought by a Japanese company and made as an anime series, and we are reviving it in a style we're calling Ultra Marionation. So yes, whereas the Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet series in the 60s were shot in Super Marionation, which is sort of, you know, the most technologically advanced puppetry you can imagine, we're going one step further with Ultra Marionation, but it's all physical, real stuff, you know, real sets, proper explosions and puppets. We did a Kickstarter a couple of years ago, and finally are now in a position to put out this lovely little miniature pilot, the Minisode. And we are within a hair's breadth of completing that project and moving on to getting things together for a full series for TV.
Great. So you're using that Minisode as a sort of a calling card, are you, with investors and production companies and people with lots of money who want to throw it away.
Broadcasters and all that sort of stuff.
I see. Great.
Yeah. And the people that have seen bits and pieces of it love it. So fingers crossed there is an appetite out there for new Gerry Anderson productions.
Yes. Exciting.
And beyond that, there's always new merchandise coming out, isn't there, Richard?
Oh, I love the new merchandise. There is so much on the Gerry Anderson store.
You're wearing some of it now, in fact.
Shake a stick out, and I'm in fact wearing, showing my allegiance, my Space Precinct T-shirt.
And it's very nice too.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you are a Gerry Anderson fan and you would like some nostalgic merchandise from one of your favourite shows, then we would encourage you to visit shop.gerryanderson.co.uk and pick up some bits and pieces. And I just would like to say that every penny spent at the Gerry Anderson store is reinvested into Anderson Entertainment's efforts to carry on the legacy.
Yeah.
So you're being a not insignificant part of those efforts.
Indeed.
By supporting the store. And also you get some cool merch too.
Yes.
Anyway, that's the kind of the end of the generic news.
Yes, well, I have a little bit of news myself, Jamie.
Do you?
Well, now, please, it's share. Only a tiny bit of news. It's like a little addendum to the main news in that a couple of years ago, Jamie showed me a couple of pieces of paper which were a very brief outline of a sitcom written by his father and a writer called Ronnie Cass called Off the Fat of the Land. Now, this was destined to become a sitcom, never made it off the ground, unfortunately, but these little brief details and a short outline were discovered after Gerry died. And Jamie passed it on to me and said, well, I don't know, do you want to do anything with this? So I wrote a play about it. I wrote a play based on the story of Off the Fat of the Land, tinkered it a little bit and changed a few characters and so on. And it's now a play for the stage, and it's been picked up for production by the Blackham Country Players, I think they are, in East Sussex in November. So if you're anywhere along the south coast, you might want to pop along. I'm sure there'll be details on their Facebook page and their website and so on. Your chance to see a lost Gerry Anderson gem live on stage.
Absolutely. And I would quite like to go and see it, Richard. Are you going to be available? Should we go?
Well, I'm going to have a look at their dates. I'll see when once they put their dates up, and I'll see if I can make it. If I can make it, I will. But as you know, I'm all over the place at the moment.
You are a very busy boy.
I am. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. But wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it is exciting. And thank you for putting all your effort into, you know,
well,
turning it into something which is all right for public consumption.
Yeah, let's put it that way. And that'll be on the poster. All right for public consumption.
Yes, acceptable. No, that is very exciting news. I should be checking that out.
Yeah.
Well, unless you have any other news, Richard, that's all I have.
Well, my coffee's going cold. Is that news?
Not really.
No. Then no.
Right, well, then what are we going to do next?
Well, this is our first episode, even though we had our little prequel. This is our first proper podcast. So we don't as yet have viewer emails, of course. We'd love you to send in any questions and thoughts to podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk. So we thought, in the absence of those emails for the first episode, that we would just ask a few frequently asked questions. These are the questions, Jamie, that I'm sure you get asked all the time. And people out there will want to know the answer. Now, firstly, and I'm asked this as well, and I never know the answer, what on earth does FAB stand for?
Well, Richard, you're right. I get asked this all the time.
Yeah.
And even when I give the answer, I'm often shouted down and people say, no, you're wrong.
Oh, really?
But I'm telling you, I'm right, because this has come from the horse's mouth, as in Dad told me multiple times, and he's on record elsewhere. I'm going to try and find the clip of him actually saying...
Ah, that'll settle it once and for all.
Well, it might do, or somebody will think it's faked or whatever. No. So FAB, it doesn't stand for anything. It's not an acronym. It is a contraction of the 1960s buzzword fabulous.
Oh, okay.
Because Dad thought it sounded cool. It sounds like a cool sign.
Yes.
But it's not. It was completely appropriate at the time, but people have tried to, you know, retrofit three-letter acronyms.
Right.
My favourite of which is Fully Acknowledged Broadcast.
Okay.
Which is quite cool. But that's not what it stands for. It doesn't stand for anything. Just for clarity, so that little clip can't be taken out of context.
No, a big fan of acronyms, wasn't he? Your dad. I mean, we've got SIG, of course. Spectrum is Green from Captain Scarlet. SPA, which I believe was Space Police Affirmative from Space Precinct.
It was indeed. PWOR in Stingray.
Right.
Proceeding with Orders Received.
Right, yeah.
I mean, and on it goes.
Well, I suppose these were little buzzwords and buzz phrases that could be picked up by kids in the playground the next day, weren't they simply that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Dad took a lot of inspiration from his time in the RAF, just after the war, when he was an RTO.
Ah, right, okay.
A radio telephone operator.
There you go.
So I think, you know, little bits like that kind of informed the way he liked to see these fictional worlds, and it made them feel more authentic having these acronyms.
Yeah, so, nice.
Yes, although as I said, FAB is not an acronym. It's just yes. attraction. But it means affirmative. That's it. Yeah,
exactly.
That's all.
And secondly, another one I've heard of our various conventions appearances over the years is how did Thunderbirds get its name? What was the inspiration behind Thunderbirds and how did it get its name?
Well, those are two vastly different questions. Yes. The inspiration came from a German mining disaster in 1962, where a mine wall collapsed, filled with water, and men were trapped at the end of one of the offshoot tunnels, and they had to get equipment in. A borehole was dug directly down, vertically down, to reach the men at the end of this tunnel, and then they were brought up one by one in capsules. So Dad thought, wouldn't it be amazing if there was an international rescue team
right.
who would have all this equipment on standby, ready to fly anywhere in the world to rescue anybody in any situation.
Yeah,
so that's a great inspiration. He found a lot of inspiration in you know, current affairs news.
Yes, real-life events. Yeah,
events like that. The name actually is quite interesting. So Dad misremembered for a long time the origin of the name. So he had an older brother who was in the RAF called Lionel, which is incidentally my middle name.
Mm-hmm.
And Lionel trained out in Arizona to be a pilot because that's where it was safe for new RAF recruits to train at that point. And Dad remembered that Lionel trained at Thunderbird Field. And that's the name that stuck in his mind. And so when they wanted to come up with a name for this fleet of vehicles in a series, which I think was going to be called International Rescue, he went for Thunderbirds.
Right.
Now, that's how he reported it for many, many years. After Dad died, I discovered a set of diaries that his mother had written, so my grandmother, and she had transcribed letters that Lionel had written from his training base in Arizona. So I started reading through these, and it turned out that Lionel trained at Falcon Field, not Thunderbird Field.
Okay.
So I kept reading until I found the first mention of Thunderbirds. Now, Thunderbirds, it's nothing to do with the field where he trained. I think it's more exciting than that.
Yeah.
So Lionel was writing home to say, great news, they're going to be shooting a film at Falcon Field,
right?
And I'm going to be an extra in it. So Dad was receiving these letters from his hero brother about the glamour of filmmaking. And that film was called The Thunderbirds.
I see.
It was an American propaganda movie, and it's still available on DVD now, and it's amazing.
Wow.
I haven't been able to spot Lionel there.
Yeah.
But Lionel was killed in combat in 1942. And so everything to do with Lionel, Dad was always a bit kind of reluctant to re-examine because it was such a painful loss for him. So he never took the time to read through those diaries and sort of fully remember where the Thunderbird's origin came from.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually that reason for the name is much more interesting than it had just been, oh, he trained at a field called Thunderbird Field.
Yes.
No, actually, it was those letters home that excited Dad about the glamour of filmmaking and Hollywood and all that sort of stuff and had an even more direct impact on his entire career, but also gave him the idea for the name.
Yeah.
But there you go. It's actually from the Thunderbirds propaganda movie from 1941.
Wonderful. Great story. So if you have any other questions for us for our future podcasts, do drop us a line at podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk. We will do our best to answer all your questions, or we could put them out there in the ether and maybe listeners could answer them for the next edition.
Yes, absolutely. I think we probably will have to put some questions out there because sometimes they're so specific and niche that we just don't know the answers.
Yeah, that's right. Even we don't know the answers.
But
we do know there are people out there who do, don't we, Jamie?
We know lots of people who are experts on all this sort of stuff.
Yes, exactly.
And how they manage to retain all information, I shall never know. But I'm glad they're there.
Yeah, so we would love all your questions, comments and thoughts. We're also after your very first memory of your very first Gerry Anderson production that you ever saw. And also, how has Gerry's work inspired you either personally or professionally in your lives? We'd love to hear all of that to podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk.
Yeah, true. Please email, or we'll have nothing to say.
Well, that's right. Never stopped us before, mind you. But yeah,
no, that you're absolutely right. Now after we do our little listener email section, my plan is each week that we have some interesting interview content, Richard.
But that's the plan, is it?
That is the plan, yes.
It'd be great to have something interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, we haven't done very well so far, so let's hope we can up the game a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, traditionally, lots of interviews are done with the actors who played voices and on-screen roles in Anson Productions or worked behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important that we do speak to those people, and we will be. But I also think it's important that, in fact, like you've been asking, we find people who were inspired by Gerry Anderson Productions, worked on connected projects, or are just in the wider world, perhaps working in entertainment, perhaps not, who have a fondness for Gerry Anderson shows.
Mm.
So we won't just be talking to, you know, the Shane Rimmers, David Grahams,
yep.
And Alan Shoebrooks of this world.
As fascinating as they are.
And we will speak to them.
Yeah.
We will get them on the podcast in due course. But we're also going to speak to other people. Now, I shall name a few who are lined up.
Right, that'd be great.
If you'd like to hear.
Let's hear.
So we have Lee Sullivan.
Ah, of course.
Comic artist. Now, mm-hmm. Lee has co-hosted Fab Live with us before.
Yes. And just the ones, mind.
Yeah, just the ones. We never invited him back. But he was quite good value, wasn't he?
He was great, yes.
Lee has a long history of not just Anderson comic work, but also Doctor Who and other kind of massive sci-fi cult franchises. Mm-hmm. But Lee is also great friends with the lovely Mike Noble, who we mentioned earlier on, and has some insights into his work. And he's also just a good, fun chap, isn't he?
Yes, indeed.
So there's somebody who's in a sort of connected working world for Gerry Anderson. We have the lovely Sophia Miles lined up.
Wow.
Now, Sophia played Lady Penelope in the much maligned 2004 Thunderbirds movie.
Yes, but loved by many too, Jamie.
Loved by many. I mean, I have to be honest, I was not a fan of it.
Yeah.
Dad certainly wasn't.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important that we kind of expand our horizons a little
Indeed.
Bit. And Sophia was an excellent Lady Penelope in that film.
Yes,
possibly
yes.
Her and Ron Cook as Parker being the only positive things for me about
okay.
it. But I have a very lovely chat with Sophia, very candid. She's very honest about, you know, what happened in that film, why she thinks it went wrong.
Okay, great.
And beyond that, fans in the wider world, we've got John Culshaw, and Chris
Amazing.
Packham,
ah.
Sophie Aldred, as you know, of Ace in Doctor Who fame.
Yes, lovely.
Who are all fans and have lots of thoughts and opinions they'd like to share about Gerry Anderson-ness in general. And
great.
So I think that's going to be quite fun.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Now, the big question is, who do we go with first?
Ah, right. I see your problem. Well, I mean, you've teased Sophia Miles quite heavily, haven't you? I think we might need to hear that one.
Should we go straight in with Sophia?
Let's go for it.
Okay, so our first interview is with Sophia Miles, who played Lady Penelope in the 2004 Thunderbirds film, but you'll also know her from Transformers and as the girl in the fireplace in Doctor Who alongside David Tennant. And she has lots to say about not only the Thunderbirds film, but the wider effect of Gerry Anderson shows. And also we touched on all sorts of other things. Now, I will say that, as with many of these interviews, this was recorded out and about in a sort of a social situation, so be prepared for some background noise, and in this case some grinding of pepper and some clashing of cutlery, but I think that's part of the nature of these, that we want them to be kind of informal and candid. So here we go, it's Sophia Miles.
So I think it's really important that I can describe the fact that you've got...
I've ordered Eggs Benedict.
Yeah. And?
And a side of avocado, smashed avocado, and an extra hollandaise on the side. A massive kind of gravy dish portion of
hollandaise. How do you stay so minuscule and slim when you're eating these giant
portions? I don't do this all the time. This is special. So I do, you know, I love food, but obviously working in the film industry, you know, you can't get too porky if you want to play kind of glamorous, you know, Lady Penelope type roles. But in order to kind of, I do try to eat quite well,
yeah,
and quite clean, I guess, is the kind of Californian word.
It's but, very LA of you, so
yeah. Yeah. I'm not vegan though, thank God. They're all doing that now over there. But every once in a while, I have a proper full-on fat feast.
I'll have to remember to bleep that out.
Oh, can you not swear?
Well, we try to put out a clean podcast so that the kiddies can listen to it.
Oh, okay. So every now and again, I'll do an alternative kids version. Every now and again, fine. I love to have a real slap-up meal.
I think I just prefer to beep it out, to be honest.
Yeah.
It does look very nice. Do you know what? I had eggs royale, actually, this
morning. Royale is the one with the smoked salmon. Was, oh, you had that earlier?
Yeah,
oh, nice.
For breakfast, so great minds.
Yep.
But I didn't have a side of avocado and
an extra
one of those, so yep. Enjoy it.
I will.
So we should do. We'll have to do a thing where you say who you are. Because
oh.
I will have done a lovely introduction, I'm sure.
Okay.
But I just need you to say I am and I,
okay.
You know, you'll know me for.
I'm Sophia Miles, and you will know me for playing Lady Penelope in the live-action movie that came out, the Thunderbirds movie that came out in 2004. So it's lovely to be here today. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a great pleasure. I'll let you get started with your breakfast.
Okay.
And obviously I can, you know, edit out any long portions of chewing
yeah.
sound. Well, since you went straight in with Lady Penelope. And I noticed you've dressed appropriately today.
Well, this is more lilac.
Lilac, but come on, it's pretty good. I think Lady Penelope would approve.
Yeah, she would. Do you know what, though? It's so funny because when we made the movie, I was so, I mean, just completely drenched in every shade of pink.
Yeah.
And for about, I would say, at least a good 5 or 10 years, I was allergic to pink. I never wore it.
Really?
And recently now, I'm wearing it again because it actually does, you know, I think it suits my skin tone quite well. So, yeah.
This is a lovely colour.
Thank you.
And very appropriate. So that when a lot of the fans hear 2004 Thunderbirds live
yeah.
action movie, they
yeah.
recoil.
Mm-hmm. But they also, I'm sure, say that the one saving grace was were the performances of myself and Ron Cook.
You who played Parker. You beat me to it. in fact, who was I chatting to earlier? In fact, Nick Briggs, who mm-hmm. rang me earlier on.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was him. No, in fact, no, it was Lee Sullivan, who is a brilliant comic artist.
Oh, yeah.
And does a lot of Doctor Who and Thunderbirds and is a Hugh Jackman fan. He said to me, send my love and regards and best wishes because she was the only good thing about that
Aww,
film.
Oh, that's
think,
really kind.
Well, it's a view that is shared by a lot of Anderson
yeah.
fans.
Did you watch it?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you watch it when it came out, or did you wait?
I didn't go to the cinema to watch it. So there was a lot of stuff that went on with Dad around that project,
yeah.
Which you may or may not know.
Well, all I heard was that he didn't watch it, and I believe he was very unhappy that it was being made in the first place. And I think the problem that we all encountered was that we made this film for children.
Mm.
And in actual fact, if you ask anyone that was between the ages of, actually, I met somebody the other day that was 3 years old and had it on a loop track and loved it. But if you ask any child between the ages of, I would say 3 and 13, maybe 14, who hadn't had the original as part of their lives, or it wasn't imprinted in their consciousness the way that it is for, you know, men in their now 30s, I guess, onwards. The children that saw it absolutely loved it and
yeah.
had it on repeat. But I do understand, you know, having seen the original and being a fan of the original, I can completely understand where the diehards were coming from
yeah.
because I would say, and I'm not blowing smoke up my own bottom, but apart from, I think, the portrayal that Ron Cook, who played Parker, and myself gave, I don't feel that the rest of the cast kind of were really resonated or brought something to the table that had at least an essence of the original. And I tried, you know, to actually, I went back and watched a lot of the originals and I thought, right, well, how can I honor that, but equally at the same time, make it current and make it accessible in this day and age for the younger generation?
Mm.
So I thought I didn't want to do an impersonation of what Sylvia had done.
Yeah.
But I wanted at least to kind of give a flavor. And I think if I'd done the full on kind of 1960? You know, that very, very clipped kind of accent, I don't think it would have been quite so accessible for kids.
No, I agree.
But I know, so your dad didn't watch it. But Sylvia did. I know she's not your mum,
yeah,
and everyone gets that wrong all the time. But she, I believe she watched it.
Well, she was a consultant on it.
Was she?
Yeah. She was brought in, which I think was another great source of anguish for Dad, he wasn't involved at all, and she was brought in.
Oh, right. Well, she turned up at the premiere, and I remember having a photograph taken with her, and I was really nervous about meeting her, but she kind of, you know, was kind and kind of said, you know, well done, you kind of carried the baton with style. But I think the other thing that a lot of people don't know is that the dialogue between myself and Parker was written by Richard Curtis, because originally it was by the same guy, I can't remember his name, oh well, doesn't matter. But it just wasn't, it wasn't on point, you know, and it wasn't at, it was supposed to be funny and it just wasn't.
Mm.
So they brought Richard in to write all of our stuff. So that really helped kind of lift everything.
Yeah. I think you can tell that it's, it all comes from a much more British place.
Yeah, and that dry sense of humour. And, you know.
Yeah, which comes naturally from having two Brits playing it and then I guess another Brit writing it.
Yeah.
I can pause it for a bit if you want to get some.
No, it's fine.
Some
food, you just
down.
Ask me something when I get a mouthful of egg.
I should let Paul Sapphire enjoy her breakfast a bit.
So, what did you think? Well, I've already asked you that.
Yeah, it's difficult for me because there was so much negativity around it for poor Dad because he knew it was happening.
Yeah.
The first thing that he saw of it was when he was in a meeting and the new the newly designed Thunderbird 4 was being the model, the giant model was being pushed past his window, which I think he found quite distressing. And then he was kept very much arm's length through the whole thing until the end point where there were concerns over the PR aspects and all that sort of stuff.
The rating? What's the R aspect?
PR.
Oh, the PR?
Yeah, you know, the marketing, getting
it out there.
Did they want
him to be involved?
They then, at the very end, which is the worst point really to approach him, said, here is a large check.
Really?
Yes, we'd love you to promote it and be an ambassador for it. And he amazingly tore up the check and said, no, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I
respect him for that, actually.
Yeah. No, it was a real...
It's a kind of really seedy way to do it, though, trying to throw money at him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how or if he would have ever been involved with that production because it was another production company doing it and he only would have ever been involved in a kind of consulting role, but it might have brought more to it, I don't know.
Mm.
But it's interesting that, you know, that the most successful aspects of it really are from those who are British and got the British sensibility, so you, Ron and Richard Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And even the design of the new craft, which were, I think, Dom Lavery, who ended up working with Dad later on, who's a British concept designer. Those kind of elements were rooted in the same history of the original show.
Mm. I was sad that Rolls-Royce didn't agree to make the car, because it seemed a bit weird having it as a Ford.
Yeah.
It's kind of not the same calibre, really. Right. But I think, I don't know if they approached them or not. Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, I don't know what the story was there either, but Americanization,
of course,
the whole thing is part of the issue. But you're right, though. I know a lot of people who are in their late 20s and early 30s now who got into it because of that film. So it's definitely not.
Like I said, I met a girl that was 3 when she watched it, which is awfully young. I don't know if I don't think my 3-year-old's quite ready for it yet, but I'll certainly show it. But she said when she met me, she kind of was so nervous. It was really sweet. And she said, I know every single line in the movie.
That's amazing. Mm. And the busted song was quite cool as well.
I'll tell you a really funny story about that. Appropriate that we're actually having lunch or brunch in Soho. Let me just finish this mouthful.
Oh, yeah, no, chew and swallow. I can always edit out the chews and swallows. Okay. Or leave them in so that it's authentic.
So, one night... This is prior to the release of prior to the release of the movie.
Mm.
But I had heard they showed us the Busted song and they showed us the video, and I actually thought it was a really catchy tune. And I'm not a musician, but I do have a very good ear for like hit music. I always know when I hear a song if it's going to be a hit. Anyway, so I was out with a couple of friends and we went to GAY,
right,
which I'm sure your viewers, well, do you want to explain it to them or should I? It's a very prolific gay nightclub in Soho. So we're in there and there's a DJ and they're playing various things. And I think I'd had a few too many that night, but I happened to have the CD of the song, which hadn't been released yet. And like I said, I'd had a few drinks. So I, you know, boldly knocked on the glass window of the DJ's, you know, area. And he kind of shot a look and looked quite irritated. And anyway, finally opened the door and I said, you know, you've got to play this. This is absolutely brilliant. And he said to me, and I'll never forget it, because we only play hits. And I said, yeah, but this is blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, go away. Anyway, lo and behold, the song went to number one and was in the charts for goodness knows how many weeks. Mm. And probably out of all of the, you know, all of the things within the movie, like that was the most successful thing. So
that's that. How did you get the role?
I was, my agent at the time sent me the script. And I used to be very unprofessional back in my younger days, and I never really used to read whole scripts. I used to just flick through until my character appeared.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, you know, I loved Thunderbirds, and I thought it was a great idea to make a film. And so I had a look at it. And I went in, I had a meeting where I met Jonathan Frakes, the director, yeah, and the casting director. And he was lovely, actually. I instantly really liked his energy, and he was just very enthusiastic and very just kind. And I remember he paid me a compliment, which I'd never forgotten, which is, he said, you know, you've got a really lovely voice. And I'd never sort of thought about it. In fact, somebody had said to me once, an actor that was, you know, trying to put me down when I was younger, told me, he was like, Sophia, you know, the one thing you need to work on is your voice. It's very weak. So charming. I already had a bit of a kind of insecurity about that. But anyway, Jonathan was lovely. So I did the initial meeting and reading. And then they called me back for a screen test. And there were about, I believe, about three other girls there. Although we were kept in secret. Well, we were kept in these holding areas, so none of us saw each other.
Oh, really?
And Marit Allen, the costume designer, who sadly died not long after the film was made, who I just thought was absolutely brilliant. So she was there and so dressed us up in various pink outfits. But like I said, I didn't see the other girls, so I don't know who else was there.
Oh, you never found out afterwards?
Well, actually, that's not true. I did see Sienna Miller kind of creeping out of, you know, one room.
Okay, so potential Lady P there, but obviously mm-hmm. beaten to it.
Yeah, and I think, well, I heard, but only from what I read, that I think the other people that got close were Rosamund Pike and Anna Friel, I think. So we did the screen test, and I remember really enjoying it. It was fun, which isn't always the norm with auditions. Sometimes they can be the most cringeworthy,
grueling, and awful as well. I just think sometimes,
yeah,
you get put through it by the casting director.
Totally, and you know the thing is that so much of, you know, what makes an audition enjoyable or comfortable is the energy that you are met with by the people, you know, with the power. Mm. And if you go into the room and, you know, they give you nothing or look at you kind of up and down, and you can, well, I can see in their eyes that I've already not got the job. And then it's just excruciatingly painful then having kind of to go through your, you know, go through the motions. But
yeah. This one just clicked.
Yeah, it just felt really good. And then I remember I was in a Greek restaurant not far from here, and my agents called me and said I got the job, and I was just so excited. And also it just felt like the first kind of big job that I'd ever gotten. I mean, I've been working since I was 15. I'm 79 now.
Very good for that.
Thank you.
Well done. Must be all that Hollandaise sauce keeping you youthful.
Yeah. I was just so excited. And just the scale of it, you know, it was going to Pinewood and seeing the sets, you know, the Tracy Island set that had the swimming pool in it. Mm. And it was just, you know, it was so much fun.
So did it have a sort of epic feel when you started shooting?
Definitely. And the best bit was that they flew us, they shot a lot of the exterior of Tracy Island in the Seychelles. Mm. And Ron Cook and I got flown over. and we were there for a week, but we only ended up shooting for a couple of hours one afternoon. So the two of us basically had this sort of all expenses paid, five-star, you know, luxury holiday in the most beautiful
life.
Place on earth. Yeah.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was amazing. I only have the fondest of memories making that film, and yeah. You know, quite frankly, I don't really care what anyone else thought. You know, to me, it was like one of the best times of my life. So.
Well, that's great. And speaking of Ron, did you kind of form a natural chemistry
with him?
Oh, I
loved him. Loved him. And in fact, he only when I have a flat in London. I live in Kent now, but I still have my flat. And he lived just down the road from me in real life. So I've stayed in touch with him ever since.
I have a lovely image of him driving you around now in a
well, yeah,
in a Rolls.
But Ron's real life car is it's nothing compared to Fab One.
Oh,
but
that's a shame.
Apparently, he told me that he was in Sainsbury's with his wife Hilary shortly after the movie came out, and there was about a 6 or 7 year old child that saw him and got completely starstruck. Walked up to him and took one look at his wife, Hilary, and then said to Ron in a very serious voice, "Where's Lady Penelope?" So sweet, thinking that Ron was being unfaithful to me.
Oh, that is sweet.
I know.
Bless him. When it came out, was the kind of reaction and the feedback what you guys were expecting? Was it a bit of a shock?
It was just sad, really, because like I said, we'd all had such fun. And I think, you know, working title with production company were really kind of had all of their money and hopes invested in it. And if it had gone right, it would have been massive for all of us.
Franchise, multiple films,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, and I think we'd have all, you know, it would have helped take all of us to the, you know, up a couple of rungs on the career ladder and opened up more opportunities, but it didn't. So that aspect of it was sad. But like I said, equally, you know, every kid I met for the next couple of years and even now, you know, loved it. So
yeah, no, it definitely struck a chord with the kids of that era, and it did. It definitely introduced them to the world of Gerry Anderson more widely. So,
and what was good. What did come out of it, excuse me, I've got another mouth for you.
Oh, enjoy it.
Was that Stephen Moffat, who everyone, I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast will know who that is.
We should say ex-showrunner of Doctor Who.
Yeah. His son, who was about 7 at the time, absolutely loved the movie. And so Stephen had watched it a gazillion times. And it was because of him seeing me in that he then offered me outright, without having to audition, the role of the girl in the fireplace in Doctor Who.
I didn't know that was a direct link.
Yeah, and I think his son came to the set on the day that David Tennant, who was playing the Doctor at the time, him and I had to kiss, which apparently, I mean, I don't know, because I was, you know, I mean, I'd seen Doctor Who when I was little, but I didn't know how much of a big deal it was that the Doctor had kind of snogged anyone. And Stephen Moffat's son was there on the day and kind of couldn't get his head around the fact that the doctor was snogging Lady Penelope. It was just all too much for him. But I kind of loved that sci-fi crossover like that. I mean, it was cool.
That is. No, I had no idea that was a direct connection, but I love the fact that it is.
Yeah.
Right, we're stopping it there. Stopping it there because Sophia and I chatted for so long, we're going to make this a two-parter. She was amazingly open about the whole process and gave us some lovely little tidbits there, didn't she?
You see, it's interesting, isn't it? The further away you get from a project, the more open you're able to be. Lovely little story there about Richard Curtis. I had no idea that he'd written those little bits of dialogue for Penelope and Harper.
I didn't either, but I think that's probably part of the reason that it was more successful as characters within that film.
If only he'd been given the whole film, imagine what it would have been like.
Yeah, it could have been completely different.
But of course, he went on then to write, much later, of course, one of the most successful episodes of New Doctor Who, didn't he? The Vincent and the Doctor. So.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so he has form in the sci-fi world.
He does. Mm. Maybe we should get in touch.
Ah, it's a thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, look, there's plenty more where that came from. Obviously, the second half of Sophia's interview to follow. Mm-hmm. And in the future, as I've said, some amazing people lined up. I should also add to the roster Nick Briggs, voice of the Daleks and exec producer at Big Finish. Robbie Stevens, formerly known as Ben Stevens, and we'll find out why, formerly known as. and also, hopefully, later this year, the lovely Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Oh, great.
Of Goodness Gracious Me fame, and also famously turned into a puppet for Thunderbirds 1965 episodes.
That's right.
Where he was, where Gallop Din was modelled after him.
Yes. Yeah, that's so fantastic. Yeah.
Look, some amazing people lined up. And if you want to hear from a particular celebrity fan, a particular voice artist, actor, whoever, just drop us a line, podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk, and if we possibly can, we will line up an interview. And I'm also looking at bringing in some archive recordings that people might not have heard to give us some extra insight from people like Christine Glanville, who's chief puppeteer on Thunderbirds, Bob Bell, longtime art director, and also from Dad. We've got a lot of archive audio with him, and I think it's only right that you guys should be able to hear it.
Great. So if you don't want to miss all those future episodes and future interviews, then you should subscribe to this podcast and you will get a little notification every time a new episode is ready for your listening pleasure.
And also, if you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us. It really, really helps.
Yes.
We're not just saying it for the sake of it. It makes a huge difference because then people can find us more easily on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you are listening to this.
Great.
It really, really massively helps. But hang on, don't go.
What?
We're not done yet.
What? Really? There's more?
I know there's more. Can you believe it? Only a little bit more.
Oh, right.
Chris Dale is a name that many of you will be familiar with, but many may not know him.
Hmm.
Chris is a voice artist and a writer and a general creator of hilarious videos on YouTube.
Yes.
Particularly with a Captain Scarlet bent to them. Chris is going to add some of his unique flavour of content to this podcast with a new segment called The Randomizer.
Mm-hmm.
The Randomizer is a machine which Chris has constructed from parts of Gerry Anderson computers from the past.
and slow-mo.
Including slow-mo from Space Precinct. And each week, Chris is going to give us a short review of a randomly chosen Gerry Anderson episode. Anyway, Chris is going to explain more, and I think he's going to do it with the help of some people from Shadow Headquarters. They'll know what to do with that sort of machine. So that's it for this episode, whichever one it was. Episode 2? Pod 2?
I think so. I think that's what we're calling it.
That's it for Pod 2. Thank you for listening. when are we going to be back, Richard?
Well, I think the hope is to have one of these out every week, isn't it? So all those people out there in podcast land, we'll see you next week. In the meantime, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and please get in touch on podcast@gerryanderson.co.uk.
Lovely. So good luck, Chris. Here's the randomizer, and I really hope it gives him something fun to watch from the Gerry Anderson canon and not one of those weird old shows.
Hmm.
Let's see. Ta-ra!
Bye-bye!
Hello, and welcome to the very first edition of The Randomizer. This is Chris Dale speaking to you live from the control room at Shadow Headquarters. Can't tell you where exactly that is, but if you're familiar with a certain long-running BBC hospital drama, I'm sure you can figure it out. And I am lucky enough to be joined today by two of the most important officers in Shadow who have volunteered to help me with a very special project. Firstly, we have here Colonel Virginia Lake.
How do you do?
And secondly, we have Lieutenant Ford.
I'm Keith.
Yes, and I've brought with me today the Randomizer, a brand new state-of-the-art high-tech computer which these two fine folks are going to help me set up. And, of course, in a room like this, I realise it's a bit much to give you both yet another computer to worry about.
Yeah, that's just what I needed.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, Lieutenant, perhaps you could explain a little about how exactly the Randomizer actually works.
The primary circuits are a series of electro-scanners positioned in series.
Yeah. The point is, we have fed into this machine the titles of every single Gerry Anderson television episode currently in existence. Everything from Twizzle through to New Captain Scarlet, including all of the available pilot films. And at the press of a button, the randomizer will select, at random, an episode for me to watch and comment upon. Now, what do you think my chances are of getting an episode that I really don't want?
I'll let you know.
Well, in my opinion, it's a million to one against.
Excellent. Well, if one of you would like to press the button to set the randomizer going for the very first time, we'll see what we can come up with. Perhaps if you'd like to do that, Colonel, the feminine touch and all that.
Yes, sir, we'll do our best.
Ah, thank you. And here we go. The machine is calculating the results. Should have that any second. Thank you, Keith.
I hope the answer's satisfactory, sir.
Well, it's, I'm not going to lie, it isn't the greatest selection possible.
I'm sorry, sir.
No, no, can't be helped, can't be helped. Right, well, thank you both so much for your help. I will go and watch this in, I think Commander Straker's office is free. I'll go watch it in there. Thank you both.
He's what?
I'm Keith.
Wow, this is all very nice. Now then, some further ground rules for the randomizer. If I land on either episode of a two-part story, I shall watch part one first and then part two next week. Dick Spanner is on this list, but we have only input the two-part versions of each story. Once an episode has been selected, it is struck off the list and will not be watched again. And lastly, the most important rule of all, the randomizer's selection will not be overruled under any circumstances. Even if it's, much like today, something I would rather put off watching for a long time to come. But nevertheless, here we are. The very first spin on the randomizer has landed us with episode 3 of Torchy the Battery Boy, Torchy and Squish.
Torchy! Torchy!
You know that feeling when you've made an enormous mistake? I'm questioning every decision I've made in my life right now.
Torchy, Torchy the Battery Boy, I'm a walking Torchy toy.
It's a very special star.
It's a Christmas ornament.
All the lost toys. And a little dog called Pom Pom the Poodle.
Pom Pom. Oh yeah, we've landed in the middle of the Torchy the Battery story arc. I forgot about this. The early episodes are very heavily serialized, which is quite unusual. I think I saw them out of order first time around, which doesn't help.
This star is called Topsy Turvy Land.
It's not a star, it's a planet.
Whatever you want. But I want to stay with you. In that case, you'll have to come back with
me. Torchy, this is a bad one. You don't want her around.
I used to belong to a naughty girl.
Girls like this, oh, it never ends well. I mean, not that I know. I'm just... Look at her. Look at those cold, dead eyes, Torchy. Oh, you've got the same cold, dead eyes, so it doesn't matter.
And there was one tree that had cream buns on it. They looked so delicious that Torchy decided to eat one.
It was a decision he would regret for the rest of his days. Well, this story wastes no time establishing a plot.
Who squirted water at me?
Ooh,
Squish.
Now, drama. Drama has arrived.
That's me.
There are some hideous puppets in this show. Absolutely hideous, but Squish...
Water squishes out.
Oh,
that's why my name's
God.
Squish.
He actually makes me ill to look at him, and that's really saying something considering who he's talking to at this moment.
I come from a country called America, and I'm a very new toy indeed. Give me back my hair!
It isn't your hair anymore.
This is taking a turn.
It's my stuffing.
No, it didn't. It's my hair. Give me back my hair.
Okay, so now we have a children's show where... the main issue is a dog is threatening to rip the doll's insides out. Because the doll has used the dog's stuffing to stuff it itself to replace its own internal organs. There are faults on both sides, is what I'm saying here, but our Torchy will sort it out.
And if I leave him alone with my rocket, he might get up to some mischief.
I don't want strangers getting up to mischief with my rocket.
I do wish Torchy'd hurry up. He's been gone for ages. This is the best-looking rocket I've ever seen.
It's the second rocket you've ever seen. What are you talking about? It looks like it was built by an old man in his back garden, which is exactly what it is.
Gee, how many knobs and levers there are.
Oh, no.
I wonder
if I can fly this
rocket. I'll push the knob that says start.
I recognize that sound effect. That was a sound effect from Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet era. That's probably the highlight of this thing. It's just a thought. Is Squish wearing an orange as a helmet? It looks like some kind of fruit he's wearing on his head. Although actually they are living in Fruit Town, aren't they? Where everything is built out of fruit. Oh no, the houses are built out of fruit. So he probably is wearing fruit as a helmet. You'll notice I'm not gripped by the drama of this at all. I'm just watching the headgear.
I'm going so fast that I feel most peculiar. Whatever can I do?
Die. Why doesn't he ever close his mouth? That's chilling. I'm Torchy sorry. Is a hideous puppet, but at least he can close his mouth. Most of the time.
We'll have to try and mend the rocket. I don't know how to mend it.
I only helped build it.
How can he talk to Mr. Bumbledrop? He's too far away. No, he's not. My beam is so magic that when it shines on someone, I can talk to them as well as see them.
Even when they're not here, it still works. Look, it just works, okay? Don't question the beam.
There's the great man himself. Mr. Bumble Wumble Drop.
Put a bright light in me face.
Afraid they don't want to come back.
They don't have a choice, Torchy. Enforce martial law. Herd them onto the ship at the point of a gun.
Okay, I actually kind of like Mr. Bumble Drop as a character, despite him being a noted sexual deviant in many fields. There is something genuinely likable about him. Oh, God, no, not these guys. These guys are not likable.
Hooray for Torchy!
Goody, goody! Hooray for Piggle Poggle!
What?
Torchy!
Was that her thing? Just mispronouncing things? I don't remember this. I've only seen, like, a handful of episodes of this. Devastatingly unsettling at first. Quite funny. But, oh dear. I can't face doing the whole series. Thank goodness the randomizer will hopefully not present me with all of the episodes back to back. And that it may be quite a while before we come back to Torchy, because Torchy is fine in small doses. Oh, Kenneth Connor, how could you? Well, APF Maidenhead, thank goodness I know you went on to better things. Pelham Films. Shame on you, Pelham Films, for producing such filth. Well, that was the very first episode of The Randomizer. That could have gone better. Thank God there's a drinks cabinet in here. I really need this. I'll see you next week, okay? Bye.
Wow. Poor Chris.
I know.
Well,
I think
Torchy is pretty creepy, isn't he?
They are some of the creepiest puppets ever created.
Bit
and
weird.
I think Chris once referred to them as 1950s nightmare fuel.
So that's about it.
I strongly suggest nobody watches those.
No.
Whole thing.
Well, let's hope he has better luck next week.
Fingers crossed.
Right. Well, I'll finish my coffee now.
I better go and do some work. Bye, Richard.
Cheers.
Stage one complete.
Let's go.